And I saw a stat once that 73% of people leave an organization because of lack of appreciation. Mm-hmm. The simple art of listening is a show of appreciation.
All right, back with episode 110 of Future Proof. Bill Sheridan here. I'm your host. By the way, happy birthday to Joe Strummer. Okay, I'm recording this on what would have been the 68th birthday of Joe Strummer, who's the, of course, the creative driving force behind The Clash, otherwise known to many as the most important rock band in the world. And, you know, it's hard to argue that. Go back and listen to London Calling or Police on My Back or Straight to Hell or, I mean, take your pick, you know, Joe Strummer, here's to you. And here's what gets me, okay? I'm 53 years old. I've lived longer than Joe Strummer did. And accomplished so much less. Drive yourself crazy thinking about stuff like that. Anyway, little flash at what's on my mind this week. The show. Let's start the show by reminding you that we are brought to you by the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses by dozens of instructors and unlimited customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. Anyway, we're not here to talk about punk rock this week. We're actually going to talk about improv, of all things. Improv, yes, comedy. And just what the hell does that have to do with the future of accounting and finance, you might ask? Well, a lot, actually. This is what Samantha White writes. So try saying that six times fast. But anyway, Samantha White writes this in Financial Management Magazine. She writes, quote, "Increasingly, professionals in other industries are getting in on the fact and finding improv to be a valuable skill to promote entrepreneurship, nurture creativity, and build leadership skills. Finance professionals are making improv classes part of their own personal development plan, with listening skills and the ability to read body language and think on your feet among the benefits. Improv can be about finding ways to convey your story to non-finance colleagues in a way that makes sense to them and to convince people that this is the best way to go. More broadly, it's about how we work with others, how we notice other people's feelings and stay truly in the moment." And that was from Neil Malarkey, co-founder of the Comedy Store Players, who draws on decades of experience as a performer to train professionals in improv for business skills. So here's what Malarkey says. He says, quote, "When you have better soft skills, you can tell your story more effectively and you'll get more respect for your technical skills," end quote. So, you know, what improv is, it's the practice of, you know, finding our best selves by focusing on others. It's yoga for your social skills. And those aren't my words. They belong to Kelly Leonard, who is executive vice president of The Second City. That is, of course, the renowned Chicago-based improv troupe that's produced comedians like, Bill Murray, Gilda Radner, John Candy, John Belushi, Dan Aykroyd, Catherine O'Hara, Mike Myers, Steve Carell, Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, Stephen Colbert, among many, many others, Second City alumni. Here's how Leonard describes improv.
"Listening is kind of important, turns out. In fact, it's vital.
Especially, and it's one of the key chapters of your book, it's listening.
Because people don't practice it. And when you improvise, you do practice it. You have to. So there are specific exercises we offer in the book that people can take home with them, listening exercises. But you got to put it into practice. I mean, I think everyone understands the need to go to a gym to work out your muscles. But where do you go to work out your social skills? And so improvisation is yoga for your social skills. It puts you in a mindful, present place where you're concentrating with eye contact to the person in front of you. You're not thinking about before or about after. And when you're operating yes and, which is the title of our book, you're not saying no. You are in agreement and affirming, and you're building something with someone else. And the way you feel after you do that, especially after like a 3-hour improv class, is the best. And so if we can bring that best self into our workplace, everything gets better.
So it turns out that the skills you need to master to become great at improv, they're also critical for becoming a skilled leader. And my guest this week, Peter Margaritis, has been looking into this. Peter's been on our show before. He's a CPA. He's a thought leader with a Business Learning Institute. He's also a comedian. He does stand-up in his free time. So he knows a lot about all of this stuff. And here's what he wrote recently on the subject. He wrote, quote, "The concept of improv is more popular now offstage. Business schools are rapidly adding improvisational acting classes to their curriculum. Kip Kelly is the director of marketing and business development at UNC Executive Development. He wrote a paper on leadership agility and how to use improvisation to build the critical skills needed in our rapidly evolving business climate. In response to how to develop agile business leaders, he hit the nail on the head. He said, quote, while knowledge and experience remain critical, it is becoming increasingly important to develop skills with the ability to deal with ambiguity and change, to lead and foster innovation and creativity, and to make and implement decisions quickly." End quote. And improv, well, it teaches us all of that. It helps us learn to connect with and listen to others and be in the moment and be flexible and follow our intuition. So Peter is going to tell us how all of that kind of comes together through the magic of improv. So good stuff this week. Good show this week. Interesting connections from unlikely places. Here is my conversation with Peter Margaritis. So, Peter, thanks for being here. The first question I've been asking pretty much everybody these days: how's life in your neck of the COVID-19 world? You doing well?
We're doing well. As you know, I've been working from home for quite a while, for about the past 10 years. So I'm accustomed to it. I don't mind it. I do miss a little bit of the travel, but yeah. My wife and son are home, and we're getting along well.
Good. Good. Yeah, that's great. I always try to keep that level of context there because I know not everyone is.
Right.
And so I feel very grateful and fortunate to have been able to keep doing this in a fairly seamless sort of way in the middle of all this chaos. So I'm glad you're doing well too. So let's dive right into this concept here because this stuff fascinates me. When I hear the word improvisation,
right,
my mind automatically goes to like comedy or acting. And you believe many of the same tenets of improvisation apply to leadership in a crisis. And one of the things that I heard you say recently is, it really kind of blows my mind, is this. I always think of improvisers as people who are just kind of making stuff up. And you say they're not doing that at all. What are they doing?
They are relying on their knowledge, their skills, their experiences. Bill, making something up is if we're having a conversation right now about the U.S. tax code with me, I would literally be making that stuff up.
Oh, yeah, me too.
And you and your audience could tell he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Right.
But in improv, we over-prepare, actually. We prepare for the unexpected. Okay. So it's, you know, we read a variety of different things. We have all these different associations in our head. And we adapt to almost any given situation that's out there. Whether we like it or not, we still need to adapt.
Yeah. And that I think that may kind of dovetail right into the next thing I wanted to talk about, this idea of adaptation. One of the things we hear all the time, one of the kind of true keys of successful improvisation, as far as I know, is this concept called yes and, right? Which to me kind of speaks to that notion of adapting to what the other person is doing. So first of all, explain that concept for those who haven't heard about it. What is yes and?
Well, yes, and is basically the main rule of improv, okay? Agree with somebody, to listen to somebody, empathize with somebody, and take the conversation, move it forward. Because when we use no and but, that shuts down a conversation. Mm-hmm. We need to search for conversations. But I'm going to take a quick step back and a little quick history of improv. It was actually the godmother of improv was a woman by the name of Viola Spolin, who was a social worker back in the day. And my dates are probably wrong here, but I think it was like the mid 40s, where she was in Chicago at this place called the Hull House, and she was working with immigrant children who had just come to the United States for the first time, working with them to so they could better assimilate into their neighborhoods, feel more at ease. And she was using these games or these exercises, ultimately now called improv. So it was originally founded as a communication tool, which her son, Paul Sills, went off in Chicago and basically started Second City. And they realized, oh, this is a theater piece as well. And then just through time, there's more written right now about improv as a business tool than ever before. I'm a CPA, so I do have a spreadsheet. I still know how to work those things. Categorizing, I'm up to about 40 business articles as relates to improv as a business skill and high rep periodicals, HBR, Wall Street Journal, Forbes. There are 38 books out there about improv as from a theater perspective to a business perspective. And there's, I think my last count, 25 to 30 YouTube videos. Okay. There's about 8 TEDx talks about improv. How do we use it as a communication tool? How do we use it as a leadership tool? And it really goes to the fact that I have respect for you. I trust you. I'm going to listen to you. And then based off that, we're going to have a conversation to solve a problem, to solve an issue. And in a time like this, yes, and is critical. We say that we want to improvise the scene that we're in, not the one we want to be in. Mm-hmm. Goes to the adaptation. Yep. So an improviser can adapt very quickly to almost anything, and even a COVID-19 environment.
Yeah, and it seems to me way too often in a business environment when it comes to, you know, having these conversations, people, and I think it's not just business. I think it's any type of conversation, right? You know, people are quote unquote conversing, talking mm-hmm. with one another, but they're really not. They're kind of like thinking, oh, what am I going to say next? Right. As opposed to actually being present and being a part of the conversation. And I think that kind of leads right to, I mean, you've listed a bunch of keys when it comes to improvisation that apply really well to leadership as well. And I think right at the top of your list is listening, right? How does that apply to improvisation and to leadership? What is it about this concept of listening that is so key to both?
Well, in improv, we call it listening to understand versus listening to respond. We live in a listen to respond environment where we're getting ahead of conversations. We're being distracted by electronics or biases in our head. We're not truly listening to what the person is saying because I'm formulating opinions, formulating ideas. And matter of fact, we'll also interrupt. Mm-hmm. And that's listening to respond. And you might be interrupting, and it might be nothing, you're just trying to get your point across so you don't forget it. However, when you interrupt somebody, they're going, well, they must not really care what I think because they're always interrupting me. Mm-hmm. Transparency, my wife and I had to have a conversation about this a while back because she kept interrupting me. And it's still, we still are both are working on that. And I've gotten better about not interrupting, but the ability to listen to understand and park our ego, park our agenda, and tune everything out and be present and listen to what the person's trying to say, and then taking a beat, and then with the yes and mentality, okay, Bill, I hear what you're saying. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but we need to, your suggestion, we can do X, Y, and Z. Versus, I'm sorry, Bill, we can't do that. That's completely, there's no way we can do that.
Right.
Well, you just shot down a person's idea. You don't know that we can't do it. Or the one that I like is, well, this is the way we've always done it. Or we tried this 5 years ago. You just got to have the best leaders are the ones who listen more than they speak.
And I think tied right into that concept of listening, at least in my mind, is the ability to ask really good questions, right? To become artful in this art of asking better questions, of really, you know, because every question you ask kind of peels back layers until you get down to the root of that. Is that part of this whole improvisation kind of concept as well? How does this art of asking questions tie into all this?
Well, if you immediately shut somebody's idea down, you haven't given it a chance to see any oxygen, per se. So when I always said, you know, accountants always like to say, yes, but we don't have it in the budget. Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. So get rid of that. Say, yes, and tell me more about this. And as they're talking, when they're done, you can go, okay, now I hear what you're saying. And did you think about this issue? Yes, I did, and explains it. And they start this conversation. It gets to some point where, you know, we tried this 3 years ago. Did you look and see what failed then? And how are you going to get past that now? Oh, I didn't think about that. Go find out, come back. Or better yet, if the conversation is going really well, the big key here is to look at the person and go, okay, I like your idea. At first, I wasn't for sure, but I really like your idea. Did you think about how I'm going to sell this to my boss? And ultimately you get to, oh, I didn't think about that. Now you've got a huge teaching point. Now they need to start thinking about how they sell it up the line. Mm-hmm. So the more that we can probe for a conversation to find out what's the essence of what are they looking for, what are they trying to accomplish, hey, we might be able to work something out. Or we'll table it for now, but here's the thing. By listening to somebody else's conversation, when you're having empathy for, you should have empathy for them because you have to remember, put yourself in their shoes, as well as they're feeling appreciated when you're listening to them. And I saw a stat once that 73% of people leave an organization because of lack of appreciation. Mm-hmm. The simple art of listening is a show of appreciation.
Yeah, in kind of all aspects of our lives, not just at the office, but personal relationships. I think that concept applies. And you know, I forget who it was that it was a book I was reading not too long ago, and I forget which one it was, but they made the point when it comes to this concept of asking better questions. You know, if for those who struggle with that concept or don't know really where to begin, just the a great place to start is just by asking why,
right?
Over and over again, right? Somebody makes a point. Well, why is that important? Mm-hmm. Okay, and they make their point there. Well, why should we be focusing on that? Or why is that a problem? Or you know, why do we need to be doing this instead of that? And every why dives a little bit deeper until you kind of get to the root of what you're trying to talk to. And I thought that was really powerful, kind of a really simple solution to a problem that a lot of us have, which is, you know, being present and really taking part in active listening. You know, just by asking that really simple question, we become more active listeners and drive that conversation forward.
Exactly. But we also need to be aware of something. So if I'm leaving a meeting, whether it's a Zoom meeting or something, and I'm going to another meeting in about 10 minutes and someone stops me before I go, or I get a Zoom call and say, do you have a few minutes? I need to ask you something. The correct response at that point is, let's find a better time, because I'm leaving a meeting and I've got that running in the back of my head. I'm walking into another meeting. I've got that going on. So I have a lot of distractions going on. So while you're talking to me, I'm really not listening. It may look like I'm listening, but I'm really not listening because I got two competing things going on in my head. Let's find time where we get rid of the distractions and we can just sit and talk.
And is that, this was another key of improvisation that you've mentioned that seems to apply pretty strongly to leadership as well. This is this notion of being present. Is that what you mean by that? What does being present look like in your mind?
What did you just say? I was distracted there for a moment. That is not being present. Having distractions, if you're having a conversation, with Tom or Jackie or Skip, and during this conversation, your mind goes to, well, what was I supposed to do? Was I supposed to pick up what? Oh, I'm sorry.
Right.
And it's really just being present is eliminating distractions. Clark Price, I tell the story all the time. You know, he was a gadget guy, loved his electronics and stuff. Mm-hmm. However, when I would come into his office, he would walk from around his desk and sit on the same side that I was sitting, but he would sit behind his computer. Mm-hmm. And have a conversation with me. And he was eliminating those distractions so he can be present. Mm-hmm. He can be using effective listening. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize it then until later on. I went, wow, that was pretty savvy of him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that just that one physical act elevates that level of being present. I think you're absolutely right. It blows my mind to this day when I hear so many people talk about, you know, oh, we're busier than ever and we all have to be multitaskers. If we're going to get something done, we've got to multitask. It's just, that to me is like the biggest myth in business that's going today, is that we can multitask. No, we can't. I don't think it's possible to be able to do that and do it well.
No, it's not possible. We're not wired to be multitaskers. We're wired to do one thing and one thing only. And the only way to get that done is to eliminate all distractions. Mm-hmm. Yep. I interviewed a guy by the name of Jake Kahana, who has focused on deep thinking. And he's got this website, it's called Cave Day, I believe. And he was putting them on live, he's doing it now remotely, that you come into a Zoom environment, that you've got something that you want to work on, and you eliminate every distraction possible. You know, phones off, everything's off, all the tabs. And whatever you're working on, we're going to be working on as a community, because as you're working, you'll look up and you'll see all these other people working. Right. And then there's some schedule breaks or whatever, but it's just so you can single-mindedly focus on one thing and one thing only, because when you do that, you get more work done and have more free time.
And it's getting, it seems like, I don't know, in this era right now, this great work from home experiment that we all seem to be part of as this crisis rolls on, that might be becoming harder to do. I don't know. It just seems to me that as great as tools like Zoom or Google Hangouts are in order to keep people connected and keep that conversation going in an era when we can't be physically together, are they making it easier to become distracted? Is it making it easier for folks to say, oh, I can be on this meeting and checking my email over here, or, you know, reading this article over here? I mean, it just seems like it's just another barrier to that type of focus and being present.
Oh, I agree. Trust me, I'm guilty of it. I'm guilty as an expert.
Oh, as am I. Yeah.
And that's why I find this cave day, and I may have the name of it wrong, but mm-hmm. the ability to be with others and being held accountable and being focused, I think that because I've tried it by myself, and you know, it's always something to come up, but if I can just be with others and be held accountable, I'm going to give it a try. I told him I'm going to sign up for one of his caves. I think I'm going to try to do it this Friday for 3.5 hours. I've got stuff I need to work on, and just to see if I can do that. Because it is that focus that we need, and we need to be ultra focused. Now, this great experiment that we're going through, there's a learning curve, mm-hmm. and that learning curve continues to evolve. But I'm hearing more and more folks saying that they probably won't be going back into the office for some time. So people are starting to get comfortable with this environment, and they're trying to find ways to maneuver in it and I've read a couple places that people are actually more productive working from home than they are working in the office.
Yeah, I've read, I think, some of the same research, and I think it depends on the person and how well they're able to adapt. But I think overall, you know, a lot of the fears that leaders had about this type of work from home environment have kind of been put to rest almost overnight because we've all been thrown into this pot together, mm-hmm. and suddenly they're realizing, you know, the stuff that they were afraid of. Well, you know what? This actually works. Yeah, so.
Here's a concept about improvisation that's really applicable today. Mm-hmm. When I say, you know, improvise the scene, you're not the one you want it to be. Another way of saying that is focus on the things that you have control over. Don't focus on the things you don't have control over. Mm-hmm. We don't have control over the virus. So early on, and if you're thinking, you know, 3, 4, 5 months ahead, and you're coming up with these what-if scenarios, and how would this happen? You start spiraling down. I mean, you can get real depressed. Trust me, I did that. And I said, stop. Yeah, I can't think out that far. I can start planning, but I'm spending way too much time. I need to focus on only the things I have control over. Mm-hmm. And I try to do that every single day. And focusing on that, but also maybe take a little bit of time going, okay, we're almost in June. States are going back, so and just keeping an eye on this, but not getting too far ahead, and listen to those who are the experts in the field. But what can you do today to have an impact? What can you do today to help your business? What can you do today to help your family? And just focus on those things that you can control, because when we focus on things we can't control, we go crazy.
Yeah, and those things that we can control, I think they go beyond just the stuff that's sitting right in front of us on our desk too. It's Daniel Burris, a futurist. He one thing that he said to us recently, which I thought was just brilliant. He said our post-pandemic success will depend on what we do now, not what we do post-pandemic.
Right.
Right. So we've got control over not just, you know, the immediate work that we're doing, but how are we going to come out of this once all of this is over and we emerge on the other side? We've got a certain level of control over that too. You know, by putting the right strategies into place and by focusing on the right things and driving our organizations forward through this crisis and being better leaders, being better crisis managers or risk managers. But I think, you know, we've got control over kind of the long-term aspects of what we do as much as we do the stuff that we just have to churn through today.
So I this sounds really strange and I don't mean it but when this all hit, and my business, my speaking business, pretty much came to somewhat of a halt, I went, okay, I've got actually time now to create the next iteration of my business.
Yeah,
what can I put into my business that might you know recession proof me a bit or pandemic proof me a bit, and while I'm not spending as much time running around the country flying on airplanes, which I do miss the travel, but I don't think I would have had this amount of time to do this amount of assessing my business if it wasn't for this global stop. Mm-hmm. And it's provided, I mean, and if, you know, the first couple months, I was busier than I was at this time, you know, last year,
yeah.
Just trying to work all this stuff out. But I'm thankful that I've been able to work on it, move forward with some stuff and still continue to try to grow my business and evolve into more of a virtual presenter, which I've always done stuff virtually, and now just being able to do more and more of it, I think it's been kind of exciting. That's each and everybody's different, but I think for entrepreneurs, you've had a chance to look at things and make some adjustments into our business models.
Yeah. So yes, and listening, being present, adaptation. All great concepts that apply to improvisation and to leadership. What are we missing there? What else can great leaders learn from great improvisers?
Well, no is an option. Okay. No is an option. And there are times that, you know, it's okay to say no. And in our profession, we say no when somebody's trying to push us across ethical boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's easy. So there are those situations. But if you can use the yes and mentality, especially when we're trying to innovate. So there's convergent thinking and divergent thinking. Now, the challenges that we have is we get together as an organization and we want to do a brainstorming session, but we're throwing out ideas, but we're also shooting them down almost immediately that won't work. I wouldn't be the devil's advocate. We can't. Whoa. But then why bring any ideas up? In an improv, we use more of a divergent thinking, which is let's come up with as many ideas as possible. Save your ego, save your criticism, save your scrutiny till later, because we want quantity. Mm-hmm. And once we've got that quantity, then we'll put the convergent thought process and go in and be critical of this. Because in improv, bad ideas are bridges to good ideas. Mm-hmm. No ideas lead to absolutely nothing. And if we create a culture that continually shoots down somebody's ideas, they're going to quit giving you the ideas.
Yeah.
When you foster a culture that you want, and especially you want crazy ideas, not that we're going to execute to them, but when we get crazy ideas, my bandwidth on what I can do and to bring it into the center expands tremendously versus I got a whole bunch of safe ideas over here. I have no creativity. I have really limited bandwidth.
That's, you know, that it reminds me of this this other exercise that that we learned about it at a conference back when we were still going to conferences, I guess, last year. There's a researcher from MIT. His name was Hal Gregerson, I believe his name was, but he introduced this concept that he called the question burst. Again, going back to this concept of asking better questions, but the idea was, and it was an exercise that he put the entire audience through. If you have a problem or an issue that you're really struggling with, to surround yourself with two or three or four other folks and run through this exercise called the question burst. So you start by stating the issue or problem you're having, and then for 5 minutes or so, the other people, not you, but the other people with you, do nothing but ask questions about that issue. Right? They don't try to solve it. They don't try to get down into the weeds, but they just ask questions. Mm-hmm. And then the idea was, and it works basically, is that at the end of those 5 minutes, the person who had the problem suddenly feels a whole lot better and more optimistic about the possibilities of solving this particular problem just by having all these questions shouted at them about what was going on. It just starts getting the wheels turning about, you know, how can I turn this around and find the opportunities embedded in this particular issue rather than worrying about the issue itself, you know? And I think there's a lot of power in that.
Oh, there absolutely is. And so being a member of National Speakers Association, this term they use a lot is masterminds, which really is a group of people getting together to work on everybody's business. And what you just described is what a mastermind group does. There's usually two people that put it quote unquote in the hot seat. And they get asked a lot of, state the problem, same thing, and they get asked a lot of questions. And just as you said, through that process comes clarity. Mm-hmm. Through that process comes, oh, I never thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And it's beautiful when it works well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it was a fascinating exercise. So I guess where's a logical place to start here? What if you had to focus in on the, you know, one concept from improvisation that could really help leaders the most right out of the box? Someone who is struggling and looking for a little bit of clarity and help in becoming a better leader in crisis. Where would you suggest that they kind of focus and start?
My advice would be to park their ego to a side.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, and that's one of the things about improv. It's not about me. It's about my team. It's my organization. So the more that I can park my ego, suppress my ego, suspend judgment, and be present and listen and use the yes and philosophy, goes a long way in solving issues and creating new opportunities. It's hard for a lot of us. And I love it when somebody calls me out, Pete, your ego's getting in the way. Yeah, you're right. Okay. So let's just shove it a little bit further out. Yep. But when we can do that, and truly listen to other people, the collective knowledge outside of your office far exceeds the collective knowledge inside of your office. Tap into that knowledge. Doesn't matter what's their position. They've got different experiences, different lives, and they've come from different organizations into yours. That's how you solve problems. And that's how you become a better leader, is thinking about everybody else and less about yourself.
Well, Peter, it's as always, it's been a pleasure. It's been a lot of fun. Thanks for being here. Thanks for the insights, and stay well, my friend.
One last thought there, Bill. It's May 27th and the Reds are still in first place. I don't think they've been in first place this early or deep into a season. So there's always a silver lining out there, my friend.
It's been a while since we've been this competitive. So yeah, I'll take that. I will take that. Definitely. Thank you. And thanks for being here again, Peter. I really appreciate it. Have a great day.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it.
Great thoughts there from Peter Margaritis. I like that one. That was a cool conversation there. You can learn more at petermargaritis.com. That's PETERMARGARITIS.com. He's written a book called Improv is No Joke. He's got a podcast by the same name. You'll find all of that and more at his website. And don't forget, this week's sponsor is the Business Learning Institute. The BLI's Future Ready Learning Framework outlines the skills that CPAs need to thrive in the rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. That framework is all about gaining and maintaining deep technical knowledge along with a strategic skill set. And we're talking about strategic aptitudes that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPA. Start mastering these future-ready skills now by visiting macpa.org/future-learning-framework. And that's all I got, gang. Have a great week. Talk to you soon.